Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Good morning, millennials. Welcome back to the Morning Toast. Happy Wednesday hump day.
Another Wednesday, another hump day in the books. The weeks are coming and they can't stop coming.
They literally cannot stop.
No, we are always here on the Tuesday afternoon. Actually, you know what? It's been so nice. I'm not even going to pretend. Like, I really enjoy
the weekly.
There's so much to talk about. We have so much to talk about today.
We have such long episodes. We don't have a guest today, but we hope you guys have enjoyed our last two guests. We have certainly enjoyed.
But today it's all us all the time.
And, you know, it feels good to, like, when we're in normal daily toast, it's like something will happen and, like, on the spot, I think, okay, what am I going to say tomorrow about this story? But to have time to, like, kind of gather my thoughts
and
sit on it.
To live with the story, like, see how it affects me, see how I feel about it tomorrow. I totally agree. I mean, pretty much I feel the same, but it is nice to not have to jump to a conclusion.
And it's nice to not have to come up, sometimes I don't know how I feel about certain subjects, to give myself some time to really marinate and think, you know, what do I think about this pregnancy or this breakup? It's been very good for my journalistic styles.
What did I think about the VMAs?
Right, and I do have some thoughts. We have a great show for you guys today, obviously. All the usual stuff. We have so much news. We have all of your Housewives recaps. A lot of seasons are coming to an end. We're coming up on reunion season. We also have Dear Toasters, which is, of course, our advice segment. So while there is no guest today, there is tons for you to enjoy.
It's just good old-fashioned toast, you know?
G-O-T.
G-O-F-T. Old-fashioned toast.
Good old-fashioned toast. That'll be today's episode name.
Hopefully it's good old-fashioned toast, because we always say we have a great show for you, but the show hasn't been done.
Right, so how do we know?
We just have high hopes for ourselves.
We're just a bunch of liars.
But before we get into everything, just, you know, inner peace check-in with you. How are we doing? We are on week 3 of vacation, and you guys, it's... Every day is better than the last.
And my journey to inner peace, you know, last week I reported back some hurdles in my journey.
Which came to a grinding halt.
By the way, and that's just a part of the journey to inner peace. I wasn't necessarily mad. I knew it was like one step in getting me to where I needed to be. And I feel as though this week was pretty much uninterrupted inner peace. It rained a lot here, so I really enjoy the rain.
That does bring peace.
Because then, like, nobody's going out, like, for hikes, and it's like we're all stuck in the house together, and I don't have to be pressured into going on a hike. And that's why I love it. And then I also spent this week rewatching the Twilight series, all 5 movies, which always, without fail, brings me such inner peace. Not even inner peace, but, like, inner joy, and really brings out the inner child in me. And I feel as though if you're on your journey looking for some inner peace, head over to the Twilight movies. It's really a fabulous place to start.
We said that at the beginning of quarantine, but, you know, we've cycled back, like, through a new era. What are we on? Like, month 7? So it's time to re-up your Twilight stanhood.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mine has been re-upped so hard.
I actually have a bonus story for you today that is Twilight
adjacent.
And it's so smoldering, this story.
Anytime.
And I don't think, like, unless you happen to stumble upon it, you will have no clue what it is.
Anytime, like, Twilight-related info or people are in the news, it brings me such joy. And I could talk about Twilight literally for forever, but what I find most interesting about Twilight is, like, obviously Rob and Kristen were, like, the biggest stars, and they still are, like, some of the biggest movie stars in the world. Robert Pattinson is playing Batman, which I've literally never been so excited to watch a Batman movie in my life. Like, I will be at the theater if they're open on, you know, the Thursday night at midnight. But there's so many other characters in the movies that I love equally as much as the main characters. Like, I loved Keelan Lutz, I loved Ashley Green, I loved Nikki Reed, and it's like they all became such big stars and then, like, literally fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's like to be a teen idol.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And everyone has their season. It is sad to watch and be like, what is this person up to now? Like, they're probably doing FabFitFun on Instagram.
What do you think Peter Facinelli's up to?
Because that's so crazy.
I know.
Because that's the bonus story.
Oh my God, it is?
It's about Peter Facinelli.
Peter Facinelli plays Carlisle, the Cullen dad, and he's not...
Dr. Carlisle.
Not Cullen. Only is he a doctor, he's so handsome, so empathetic, has more empathy than even Immortal, you know?
Yes.
And his last name is Facinelli.
Facinelli, and according to Forbes, Dr. Yes. Carlisle Cullen, at the time that this article was written, is the wealthiest fictional character of all time, worth about $30 billion based on investments he made using Ashley Green's ability to see the future.
That's insider trading.
Yeah, I mean, love to see it.
Love to see it. That's like my favorite like trivia fact that you know, is that like Carlisle is the wealthiest fictional character out there.
Yes, but then it just like, I get sort of bogged down because when Bella went to Italy to the Volturi to stop Edward from sparkling in the sun, mm-hmm. she flew commercial. And I feel as though we know that Carlisle has the funds for a plane, and I feel as though she should have been flying private.
So there are a few, very few inconsistencies in the franchise that after watching it so many times, like I have pointed out, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. But see, then when they go to Brazil for the honeymoon, and then they have to come back early because, spoiler alert, Bella gets pregnant, they fly back private.
Yes, they do, because by then they've worked out
the deal that
they're rolling in the dough.
Another inconsistency is that Jasper in the first movie has a gift. He's like, he can change your mood. And then they like never talk about it again. And Bella is susceptible to all the power. She's like, Edward can't read her mind.
Not susceptible.
She's a shield. So it's like Bella can't get her mind read by Edward. The Volturi can't take her hand. But somehow like Jasper's gift works on her.
In that one scene.
Yeah, in the high school halls. Like it was 1 second.
Yeah. I'm sure if you read the books, which I'm really close to starting the Twilight books because I'm sure there's so much information in there that just is skated right by in mm-hmm. the movie because it's hard to, you know, get everything in there and so much history. So I really might read the books and I really might read Midnight Sun, which is the new book.
Well, so that is the other thing worth talking about is when I watch the movies, the one kind of gripe I have is that there's not enough Edward. Like, I know that Bella is the star, but Edward is everything. Like, just his mannerisms and his clothing. Like, I just need more Edward, more Edward. And I feel like we don't even get enough of him because it's really the story from Bella's perspective.
Right.
The books are written from her perspective. So Midnight Sun is the same story, but written from Edward's perspective. And I would like a Midnight Sun movie. Like, I need Edward.
You might get one. Midnight Sun has been on the top of, like, every list. I think I'm going to read it, but I just don't know if I should read Twilight first. Like, it might be such a gift to myself to read Twilight.
I think you should.
Because it's like, you want more Twilight? Read it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You should
read
it.
And then I'll have a better understanding of, like, maybe some of the stocks that Carlisle invested in. You know, like...
100%.
So I'm really thinking about it. That was your Twilight recap. But also, every time I watch a movie, it just makes me think about our hypothesis that has been proven to be true, that great movies are mm-hmm. made greater when the couple is in love on right. set. And I think about a lot of the movies that are very similar to Twilight that don't have that same it factor because of those reasons.
100%.
And one that really comes to mind is 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Because in, like, the tabloids and stuff, like Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan, like, fucking hate each other.
Oh.
There's, like, really no chemistry. I only watched the first movie, and it's just, like, it's not a great love story because they're not in love.
Yeah, and I guess it's an unrealistic standard to set that, like, every love story you watch, like, the people have to be in love. But, like,
If you want your movie to have that X factor.
And that cult following. It's, like, the 50 Shades book had the similar following to Twilight. Like, online, such a big audience. Like, the writer became a star. Like, it was the same type of thing, and the movies didn't translate the same because there was no love.
Yeah, and I think not only does it come off the screen, but when you're watching the movie, knowing that the two people are in love, you believe it even more. So even if the acting would be the same regardless, it's like something about the audience in their brain knowing...
They can believe it.
...that they're watching two people in love. It's just like The Notebook. It just hits different when they're in love. And I'm sure 50 Shades of Grey does well, even though I find, like, it's... just annoying.
It's not my franchise.
I find the franchise to be so annoying.
It ain't my franchise.
And knowing that they don't even like each other, like, I just don't see any chemistry when I watch the first movie, so I didn't watch the others. Also, a movie series that is so, so good, like, incredible, but just missing that X factor of love believability.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it.
Say it.
Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah.
Because maybe if Jennifer Lawrence ends up with Liam Hemsworth, I would believe it in the end. But Jennifer Lawrence ending up with the little one?
By the way, I don't even remember that that's what she ends up with. PETA.
Is it PETA?
Yeah.
Okay,
PETA. Chip, yeah.
No, I just can't... I always think Gail is PETA and PETA's Gail.
No, Gail is
Liam.
PETA is Josh Hutcherson.
I just didn't believe any of it. And they had me until the last movie, the last 5 minutes, and I would have believed pretty much anything. But to believe that that was how it ended, like, Jennifer Lawrence and PETA were not in love.
No, by the way, I completely agree with you. And there are so few franchises that I can point to that had that X Factor. High School Musical.
High School Musical.
Twilight. There aren't that many. And I feel like when...
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes! Good one. That's not a franchise, but
no,
yeah.
No, but movies.
Movies.
Notebook.
I've been watching, like, bonus features and, like, all these behind-the-scenes interviews, like, just because, like, when you're done with the series of Twilight, like, you need more.
Yeah. And, it's an addiction.
And we watched Kristen Stewart on Howard Stern, and he was, like, a Twilight stan. He, like, obviously loved the movies.
He knows quality content when he sees it.
Every time I watch something new on Howard Stern, like, I'm even more, like, in love with
firm
him.
Firm in your stanhood.
Yeah. So what she said was really interesting was that, first of all, like, they were very much in love. It wasn't, like, a PR stunt. And actually, on the flip side, like, the directors and, like, the people in the industry were actually really worried that they had, like, fallen in love so hard so fast on the first movie because it can end badly and then it can affect the franchise. And I find it so interesting that, like, these big wigs don't like when their stars date because they don't know that it's actually the key to a perfect movie.
Yeah, but, like, if they break up in the middle of the franchise, but still the people know that there was love there. So even if they're broken up, it's like, I'm still watching two people who have real love and affection for each other. And I can reconcile that.
Okay, ready? I have another one. The Kissing Booth.
I was just thinking about
that. And that's the perfect example. The first movie, although if you watch it, like, through a normal lens, like, it's a terrible movie, but if you watch it knowing, like, that they're in love and it's actually, like, a cute movie, you could suspend disbelief because some of it is, like, so not believable. It is actually a really good movie, the first one, and their love makes it so much better because you can't believe that, like, these two people so randomly met on a set and fell in love, and, like, it's actually so cute. The second movie, which still had that, like, cringy non-believability that the first one had, but it didn't have the love connection, is why it's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that, and they should have just, like, not done a second movie to protect the integrity of the first.
100%.
And I will also say, I think that the Descendants franchise suffered because we know that Dove Cameron in real life was dating, like, a supporting actor.
Yep.
And it's like, she's pretending to be in love with King Ben when it's like, you guys don't even hang out off set. She's in love with the pirate over there.
Yeah, oh, wait, I have another one.
Okay.
Riverdale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We had Jughead and Betty. And
they're really good about that. And also when they gave us Cammy and Melton.
Mm-hmm.
They
capitalized on it.
Yeah. They got them together in the show while they were together, and they broke up when they broke up. Like, I'm so fucking here for that.
No, that is called, like, being flexible.
Oh, also.
What?
The last song.
Yes! Oh my god, yes. This is actually a fun game.
This is a fun game.
Because you're right, these movies that, like, I have really cemented, like, in my childhood and my adolescence, the ones that stuck around are always the ones
The ones that hit different. Mm-hmm. They just hit different. Like, you're watching that inexplicable, magical feeling mm-hmm. of love. You can't put your finger on it.
Can't.
Hunger Games is an amazing franchise, but the love didn't fall off the screen and into my lap and into my heart.
No, but it certainly did in the Twilight series. So if you're on your journey to inner peace, I highly recommend checking out the Twilight series. No matter how many times you've seen it, you could watch it. It's like there's so much things you might have missed, you know?
Things you might have missed.
You know what? I missed something huge, and I've seen it so many times. Spoiler alert. When Bella gives birth and dies... And then she, like, they put the venom in her, and overnight, it takes a long time, so overnight she becomes a vampire when, like, we are presuming that she's dead.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that the Cullens actually knew that she wasn't dead and she was going to come back to life. Like, she didn't surprise them and be like, ooh, I'm a vampire, I'm alive. But I thought the whole time that, like, everyone thought she was dead.
Me too. But it turns out they knew that she was going to seem dead for a while because of all the morphine mm-hmm. from the birth.
Right. So just yet another thing I might have missed.
Yeah. No, so interesting. There's so much there.
There's so much there. I could literally start a Twilight podcast. Like,
yeah. Maybe you should read the books and start. Oh my god, you could join the Redheads. Should we do that for next Redheads? Actually, you guys, new episode of the Redheads drops tomorrow.
Wow.
We are recapping Bright Side. It was a very lively conversation, and I'm choosing the next book. And I'm really excited about everything that's coming up for the Redheads. Like, it's just a great time to be a redhead.
It always is.
It always is. That's the thing about being a redhead. It's like always...
There's never a bad time.
There's never a bad time to join. There's never a bad time to be one. We're always there for you. We're always reading. I've been reading so much. Now, Lauren Elizabeth and a million other people, but I was texting her and she recommended a book to me, and so I took that to heart. But she recommended The Perfect Couple by Ellen Hildebrand, who's like a romance author who's written like 25 books. And so now I've like fallen into Ellen Hildebrand. I've read two books. I read also 28 Summers. I just finished that. And now I'm just like falling down this rabbit hole. So I will be in Nantucket with Ellen Hildebrand.
Until further notice.
Until further notice. But anyways, other than that, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Sorry, how you doing? How you doing?
I mean, I'm doing sensationally, really. There's no other way
to describe it. I didn't even have to ask. I know.
I will say my inner peace was wrecked this week by a devastating hangover.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That took me down for about 36 hours. It was really hard to watch, I think. It was hard to go through.
It was hard for us to, like, sit downstairs knowing you were upstairs sleeping, because we were like, she's never going to drink again. Like, yeah. This is exactly what she didn't want to happen.
Yeah, and you know what? I get to this place every 3 months. It's cyclical, because it's like, I have this horrible hangover. I don't drink for a while. Then I drink slowly. I'm always reminded of my hangover days. And then 3 months from now, I'm feeling sort of brave and brazen, mm-hmm. and I just, there's a hole in the bottle, you know?
I mean, in the defense of the hangover, like, you did ask for it. Like, you were drinking so much.
I was drinking so much because I just, like, forgot what my body is capable
and
of.
And by the way, I loved it so much.
I know, and I had really such a great time. But that did take away, like, 2 days off the calendar of inner peace.
I mean, that's to be expected. And the thing about inner peace is that if you always have it, you won't appreciate it. So
100%.
It needs to be a roller coaster, because you need to have it and appreciate it and reflect on the times where you didn't have it.
Yes, definitely. So I think without further ado and without further Twilight fanfare, it is time for Theo to finally sit.
Theo, sit.
You guys,
Theo. Like, he's literally, like, running all over the microphone. Can you just... Good. Okay.
Okay. It is time for the Fast Five stories that you need to know before you wake up and take a bite out of your morning toast.
And Jackie, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, over the week when we took a drive and I actually got stuck at a rest stop with a terrible case of RDH, I spoke to the doctor and she basically said the answer is nothing new. Today's episode is brought to you by Nothing New.
We love Nothing New. We told you guys about it in an earlier episode. Nothing New is amazing. I just got 3 pairs of sneakers from Nothing New. And the best thing about them is they're made out of nothing that's new, because it's all recyclable.
Recycled water bottles, 100% sustainable materials like fishing nets, recycled cotton, recycled rubber, recycled cork. The list goes on.
Which we love to see. But then also the shoes come in the colors of Pliny Vibes, which we doubly love to see.
Doubly. I mean, they come in high top sneakers, low top sneakers. I saw they also make socks. It's a fabulous company. They're designed with comfort in mind, so you would never know that you're wearing a pair of sneakers made from recycled materials when you put them on, but you can feel good knowing that they are recycled, and you can look good because they're fly as hell. They have over 15 colors to choose from. It costs more to make an eco-friendly sneaker without the harmful glues and chemicals that most sneakers are made with. So Nothing New doesn't do sales or discounts at this time, but they're happy to give back to the environment. For Morning Toast listeners, they're going to plant a tree for every pair purchased. So if you go to nothingnew.com/toast, that's nothingnew.com/toast, and try a pair with free shipping and returns today, Nothing New will plant a tree in a forest in need. So in your name, you can get a sexy pair of shoes, and a tree planted in your name. I love that. There's really no reason not to buy Nothing New. They're totally sustainable, totally recycled. And they're totally cute.
Okay. First story. The biggest story of the week. Such sad news. Black Panther star Chadwick Boseman dies of cancer at the age of 43. Chadwick Boseman, who played Black American icons Jackie Robinson and James Brown with searing intensity before inspiring audiences worldwide as the regal Black Panther in Marvel's blockbuster movie franchise, died Friday of cancer. He was 43. Boseman died at his home in Los Angeles with his wife and family by his side, his publicist told the AP. Boseman was diagnosed with colon cancer 4 years ago, his family said in a statement. Quote, "A true fighter, Chadwick persevered through it all and brought you many of the films you have come to love so much. From Marshall to The Five Bloods, August Wilson's Mulroney's Black Bottom, and several more, all were filmed during and between countless surgeries and chemotherapy. It was the honor of his career to bring King T'Challa to life in Black Panther." He had not spoken publicly about the diagnosis. He is survived by his wife and a parent.
This is the craziest story. Like, we were all sitting around and Ben was on his phone and he said Chadwick Boseman died. And, like, you know when, like, words just don't register?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? I mean, it's such an unbelievable story. One, because, you know, when certain people die, it feels like they were never here. Like, now he had this, like, legendary presence to him, like, so much because of Black Panther and the iconic black roles that he played. And now because he's not here, it feels like it's just one of those things where, like, you can't get over it. And I couldn't process it. And it's so sad. And it's just unheard of. Like, this whole thing, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's so sad. It just goes to show you that life is so short. Mm-hmm. You absolutely never know what people are going through. So many people wrote, like, amazing tributes to him. He was an amazing person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that really came off screen. Like, that wasn't a surprise to hear about him. But to know what he was, like, struggling with in his personal life for 4 years. And he did all those movies during that time.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you, like, make the most of every moment. And
you never know what someone's going through. I mean, I saw something being posted. Like, he kind of resurfaced on social media a few weeks ago. Looking, you know, visibly different. He was much thinner. And, of course, people were speculating, you know, is it for a role? And then those kinds of conversation turned into just, like, speaking on someone's body, which is... You should never fucking do.
Yeah, no, they were mean and critical and assuming the worst.
Right. And so I think one of the many lessons to take away from... this is, first of all, you never know what's going on in someone's life, so just, like, shut your fucking mouth. And two, life is so short. I mean, 43 years old. I thought he was younger, because he has this, like, young, vibrant presence to him on screen, but it's a terrible story. Like, it's one of those things, like, I thought about it all weekend. I couldn't stop thinking about it. It's just so sad.
Yeah, it's just so sad. And so our hearts are with his family and everyone who was affected by his...
loss, which is so many loss people.
And his life...
work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about, like, what Black Panther did, when we just watched it, which I'm so glad that we did, and we recapped it, like, what it did for the Black community, and I kept seeing so many people on social media, like, some of the Potomac housewives, like, sharing how their kids have been impacted by, like, the first Black superhero. Like, it's such a legacy to leave behind, and it's just crazy that he was only 43, and, like, he just did that. And playing also, like, Jackie Robinson, like, amazing Black people in history, but also leaving a legacy of, like, the first and only, so far, Black superhero, and, like, what that did for little kids. Like, it's just, it's crazy.
It's crazy. He's on the cover of this newest issue of People magazine, A Hero Gone Too Soon. They're celebrating the extraordinary life and legacy of a star who changed the world while privately struggling with cancer. It's just so sad.
It's such a brave thing to do so privately.
Oh, for sure.
It's just terrible. It's a really, it's a very upsetting story.
Yeah, very upsetting. But he was honored in many different ways. One way was in the VMAs.
Oh, yes.
That aired this weekend.
They dedicated the entire show to him.
Yes. We watched a bit of the VMAs.
We did.
We're going to share some of our favorite and least favorite moments. The 2020 MTV Video Music Awards on Sunday looked a little different from previous years, given that it was one of the first live award shows held since the coronavirus shutdown. Live should be in quotes because this whole thing is so confusing.
No. And they literally kept saying live, and it was the opposite of live.
It was the opposite of live. Like,
I don't know what part of it are they saying was live.
Maybe Keke Palmer hosting on a green screen.
And maybe the accepting.
But... I don't know, because then so many people sent in videos, so, like, those were done days in advance. Anyways.
And, like, Madison Beer posted a picture of herself accepting before she actually came on.
Bella Hadid was photographed in an outfit that she wore while she presented.
Oh!
Like, I saw...
Those
paparazzi pictures. That's what she wore to the show. That was maybe the day before?
I mean, and people in New York were freaking out because, The Weeknd performed at Hudson Yards, and they had this amazing fireworks display, and they said they were going to go off at a certain time, but they went off, like, 3 hours earlier. And, like, in this climate, like, you just can't be making unnecessary loud sounds. Like, you just can't. People were freaking out. So, and it wasn't even on Sunday. Like, it was 2 days. It was on Friday or something.
Oh, was,
like,
it?
Yeah, or Thursday. Like, there's no consistency.
Right. There was nothing that felt live about it. The show's featured performances from Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande, BTS, Miley Cyrus, Black Eyed Peas, and other A-listers took the stage, like Drew Barrymore and Kelly Clarkson, to present. Okay, let's get into of it.
Let's talk about, for me, this was one of the first really remote award shows, but half remote. People were still in person.
Yes, it was the most, like, present award show that we've had yet. So that was exciting.
Yes, I think that they did a good job logistically I thought Keke Palmer was an amazing choice for host, and I thought she did a great job and brought a lot of energy to the job. And I think that, like, green screen thing she had it standing in and making it seem like they were fans on the rooftops, like,
and also the clapping tracks.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I was appreciative of the clapping tracks.
I thought it was good, and I think I liked that they actually had people come and accept, and everyone was by themselves. Joey King was over here, Lady Gaga, you know what I mean? It was good. Now, the actual content, I do have a different story.
Yeah, no, it was not good.
Well, because you want to know why? There were, like, no famous people there. Like, literally, Lady Gaga was the most famous person there, and she won every award. She won every, the Lady Gaga yeah, Awards.
She was the only one who agreed to show up, and so she won everything.
Like, and by the way, whenever we recap the VMAs, we always say, it's like, they make a deal every year with the most famous person to show up. Like, you will win the awards if you showed up. Taylor went last year. 2 years ago, when I actually went to the VMAs, it was Ariana Grande, because that was the whole Sweetener era. Like, they make a deal, and then nobody else comes.
Yeah, like, no, or it's like, if you show up, you will win an award. If, yeah. You may not win all of them, you'll lose some of them, but you, if you are there, it means you will win. So Lady Gaga won everything. And let's go through the awards, who won.
Okay.
Video of the Year went to The Weeknd for Blinding Lights.
And who else was nominated?
Taylor Swift, The Man, Lady Gaga, Rain on Me, Future, and Drake, Life is Good, Eminem featuring Juice WRLD, Godzilla, Billie Eilish, Everything I Wanted.
Okay, The Weeknd gets it.
Yeah,
I agree with
but
that.
But it's so crazy. All of these videos, to me, like, none of them really stand out as iconic.
Me too.
But the Video of the Year category is, like, such a big deal. Ever
it's
since
a polarizing.
Yeah, ever since, like, Kanye, you yeah. know? But it's like, oh, no, this means something.
No, and, like, to me, now you're announcing the winners, like, it seems meaningless. Like, Kanye would literally never get up and, like, it's a meaningless award. It means nothing.
Yeah, but maybe just the videos this year
weren't.
I'm trying to think back to, like, what the Video of the Year feels like to me. Like, I'm still living in the Thank You Next era.
Yeah, of course. You know? We all are.
Okay, next up, Artist of the Year went to Lady Gaga. Other nominees were DaBaby, Justin Bieber, Megan Thee Stallion, Post Malone, The Weeknd.
I actually think it should have went to Megan Thee Stallion. I know that it was Lady Gaga's night because she showed up and Megan Thee Stallion did not. But Megan Thee Stallion has had an incredible year. And her song, Savage, like, literally broke every record.
Well, yeah. So that brings us to the next category, Song of the Year. Billie Eilish, Everything I Wanted, Doja Cat, Say So, the winner, which was Lady Gaga, Rain on Me, Megan Thee Stallion, Savage, Post Malone, Circles, Roddy Ricch, The Box.
So yeah, honestly,
Savage is the Song of the Year.
I think of all of the nominees, Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande, Rain on Me, is my favorite in the category, but by no means did I think it was the Song of the Year. I think it's probably the least eligible in that category. I would have given it to Megan Thee Stallion, Doja Cat, Post Malone, or Roddy Ricch. Like,
yeah.
All of those songs were so much bigger, and that kills me to say because I love Rain on Me, but it's the truth.
But, like, no, but, and I agree with all of those songs, like, Circles, I fucking love that song.
Me too.
I love Say So, but, like, when I think of 2020, I will think of Savage.
Yeah.
Like, Carole Baskin.
Yeah.
Killed her husband, whacked him. Like, everything about this year is Savage. Then, like, Beyonce remixed it, and, like, that song
tennis
has
bracelet.
Whole new life. So, I think that, like, at a certain point, yes, MTV has to give it to the person who showed up, but also, like, if you want to be the arbiter of culture, call the Song of the Year what the Song of the Year was. And I fucking love Rain on Me, and I
it was the Song of your year.
It was the Song of my year, but, like, we have to be honest is the Song of the Year.
And we have to be, like, unbiased. Like, you just have to think of it, and, like, I know all these songs, I've heard all these songs, I like some of these songs more than the other, but you really can't deny what Megan Thee Stallion did, or even Doja Cat. Say So was
a big song.
So I don't know, part of the VMAs have become so disappointing in the sense that, like, the awards are totally meaningless.
Like,
there's no merit.
Was Rain on Me ever, like, turned into a TikTok dance?
No.
Then how can it be the Song of the Year? Like, what year are you living in?
It's so true. You're speaking facts.
Thank you. Also, someone who was snubbed from literally every single category, who I think is among the artists of the year, is Dua Lipa.
Agreed.
Where the fuck was she?
Where the fuck?
Why isn't Don't Start Now or Physical mm-hmm. nominated for Song of the Year? Her album wasn't nominated for anything. She didn't, like, does she have beef with MTV?
It seems like they went out of their way to exclude her from every single category.
From every single category.
Yeah.
Just makes you think. Also, Best Collaboration went to Lady Gaga and Ariana, Rain on Me. And you know what? I can agree with that.
I agree as well.
Best New Artist went to Doja Cat. Love to see it. She also performed. I loved her performance.
Oh my God, she did such a good job.
Yeah.
She has, like, I mean, I know her music exclusively from TikTok. Boss Babe, Like That, Say So. And I just love her music so much. And she's, like, such a cool girl. And by the way, I just found out she's half Jewish.
Yeah, so exciting.
So now we have to love her.
So now we have no choice but to stand.
And I thought her performance was sensational. She did such a good job. She's a great dancer.
Yeah. It was really enjoyable to watch, but overall, I did not find the award show enjoyable to watch. On the one hand, I felt, like, old and irrelevant, and then on the other hand, I felt like this award show isn't relevant either. Like, You know, it's not that I'm just feeling old because everything happening is so young. It's like, where are even the young artists? Like, Megan Thee Stallion wasn't there. Harry Styles wasn't there. Billie Eilish wasn't there. It's like, who was this for? Apparently, Black Eyed Peas closed the show.
Right. And that's how you know we're living in a strange time. Also, you could see it in the presenters. I mean, I love her, but, like, I genuinely have no clue what Drew Barrymore was doing there. Like, she just didn't fit in, and it made no fucking sense. And even, like, in the presenters, and I love these girls, and I'm not saying anything bad about them, but, like, Joey King and Madison Beer being the most famous people to perform at the MTV VMAs, I'm like, that's... And by the way, I love those girls. I don't want to say anything bad about them. I'm just saying, like, for the level of what type of show this has been in the past, I just didn't feel like the talent was met the bar.
I agree, and, like, you know everyone's home and pretty much available.
right.
So, I agree. Also, the... videos that were coming in, like the acceptance speeches from people who weren't there to accept their awards, and by there, what does that even mean? Because, like, they could have filmed anything in front of a green screen and pretended that they were there. It literally felt like someone was making a cameo for their coworker's, like, cousin sister.
Yeah.
It was just like Taylor Swift, like, in a closet, like, thank you guys. Like, it was just so cameo.
We watched 2 hours. I don't know how long it went on, but it just felt so dragged on. And I think part of the reason why I was excited at first, but that excitement slowly started to fizzle out as the show went on, is because what I love most about award shows, even like the loseriest, from like the most, from the Grammys all the way down to like the People's Choice Awards, my favorite part of award shows is seeing celebrities out of their natural element, interacting with one another, being caught on camera, like just that like human social interaction is my favorite part. Just seeing how they act like in a social setting, like are they holding drinks? Who's talking to who? And we totally didn't have any of that. And to me, that's the most valuable part of an award show and having all these celebrities in the same room. And we didn't have that with the VMAs. So I think logistically, they did a good job of like getting the show done. There was performances, presenters, yeah, all that stuff. But it was not the most entertaining thing I've ever watched.
No, it really wasn't. It was a letdown, I'm not going to lie. Because they do have access to all these big names and talent, and they just found a way to like make me feel more sad about my current situation.
Yeah,
about this year, exactly. Also, Miley Cyrus was there, your favorite. She got back on the wrecking ball.
I don't really like to talk about Miley Cyrus because I feel like people...
It's the golden rule. Like, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah, but what I'm going to say is like, if you're trying to move into a new era and, like, you're talking about how, like, this is the real you and you're swinging on a ball that made you famous 5 years ago, like, you're not in a new era. Sorry.
Okay. I do like that song, though. So we'll end on that note. Some more award show exciting news that is exciting, bittersweet. The CMA Awards have been announced. It's bitter because there probably won't be a CMA Awards this year where we'll get to hit the red carpet and talk to all of these nominees. But it's sweet because I do feel as though justice is being served.
Well, there's a lot of things that I read the nominees when I woke up this morning, and I always go to Entertainer of the Year to see one who was nominated and two if there's a woman. And last year...
There's two.
Right. Last year there was Carrie Underwood, and now we have two women. Miranda Lambert, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, two women. So the CMA Awards give female artists a far bigger look as Miranda Lambert leads nominations with 7.
Queen.
Although the CMA Awards themed its 2019 telecast around women's contributions to the genre, 2020 is turning out to be the year in which that's actually borne out in the nominations.
Yep.
Shade. In the slate of nominees announced Tuesday morning, female artists made up 2 or sometimes 3 of the 5 contenders in nearly every category, marking far greater representation than usual in the genre. Making a major comeback in CMA Awards contention, as she recently has at country radio, Miranda Lambert earned the most nominations with 7, upping her career tally to 55.
I just have to say, I have had really like made a 180 on Miranda
Thank you.
Lambert.
Good.
I used to not like her because I just felt like her whole like public thing was so messy, like after Blake Shelton, and I never really liked her music, and I just didn't understand like why people like stand her so much. And to be honest, like the music she's putting out right now is so beautiful and so sickening. I was literally watching like a commercial for some like diabetes pill, and her song came on, and I'm like, why do I know this song? And it was The House That Built Me, which is such a beautiful song.
Such a beautiful song.
And I just have to say, I was wrong. I apologize, and I stand. And by the way, I'm not above doing that.
Great. We absolutely love to hear it. Also, the genre's newest legitimate superstar, this is Variety who said this, Luke Combs, followed with 6 nods. Maren Morris, who was eligible for her crossover Smash the Bones, but not her album, which fell into the previous award cycle, is a strong contender with 5 nominations.
By the way,
Carly Pearce earned 4.
Wait, by the way, that's crazy that Maren Morris is the 3rd most nominated person and her album didn't even qualify. It's just the collab she did with Hozier.
Yeah, Carly Pearce earned 4.
Okay, the most interesting thing.
As did Dan and Shay. The most interesting thing is two freshman women who had number one singles this year were nominated twice is Ingrid Andress, who we fucking love. She makes up the Quarantine's playlist, you guys. If you haven't listened to Ingrid Andress in quarantine, you have not lived.
The song that was nominated for Ingrid Andress was, what's it called?
The one.
Why can't I say? More Hearts Than Mine.
More Hearts Than Mine.
That is such a beautiful song. I highly encourage you to listen to it. So the fact that I think it got nominated for Record of the Year is crazy. But also crazy is Gabby Barrett, I hope,
yes,
was nominated for Single of the Year, which is just crazy. Like, she was on American Idol 2 years ago. Now she's nominated for a CMA. That must be like
two CMAs she's nominated for. Sickening. Her and Ingrid both nominated for two CMAs. So now I'm going to go through each category.
Okay, and we're
the biggest ones. And we're going to pick a winner. For Entertainer of the Year.
Which is, for those who don't know, because I feel like maybe some people don't listen to country music, it is the most prestigious. Taylor Swift had actually won it. She was one of the first women to win it a couple years ago.
And it's about, obviously, who had the best songs, but also, like, touring and I think even, like,
streams,
Instagram, social media.
Everything.
Who's everywhere? Who's doing it all? Obviously, touring doesn't really apply in 2020, but, like, who was making themselves a present? Who was entertaining this year? We have Eric Church, who weirdly is nominated every single year. I don't know why. Luke Combs, Miranda Lambert, Carrie Underwood, Keith Urban.
Okay, I don't know if I'm just, like, so biased.
It's Luke Combs. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like,
It literally was his year.
He entertained me all year.
All year.
His album came out in November, entertained me. 6 Feet Apart came out in quarantine, entertained me.
His wedding
entertained me. Like,
agreed.
His TikTok entertained me.
Agreed.
Everything about him, it was entertaining.
Agreed.
And he's the winner for that reason.
Yeah, like, in my eyes and in my heart, he's the winner in every category he was nominated in, but I'm trying not to be biased.
Okay, next up, Single of the Year, 10,000 Hours, Dan and Shay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love that song as much as everyone else.
I like it.
I like it, but it's not, like...
It's not Single of the Year.
It's not Tequila. Beer Never Broke My Heart, Luke Combs. Bluebird, Miranda Lambert. The Bones, Maren Morris. I Hope, Gabby Barrett.
Okay, I'm not just trying to be biased, but, like, Beer Never Broke My Heart was, like, obviously the song of the year.
Yeah.
Like, that song, people were, like, rocking their necks out. And it wasn't just people who love country music. It was cross-genre. I'm sorry, it was Luke Combs.
Yep, I agree. Album of the Year. Heartache Medication, John Party.
I actually love that song.
For the album.
No, I know.
Oh, okay. Never Will by Ashley McBride. Old Dominion by Old Dominion. What You See Is What You Get, Luke Combs. Wild Card, Miranda Lambert. Now, I don't, like, mean to be biased here. But What You See Is What You Get by Luke Combs was the album of the year.
It was the album of my year.
It was the album of my year for sure.
Yeah, see, I don't know if we, like, live in this bubble where, like, Luke Combs is the center of the universe. But
yeah.
I think that that's actually just what the world is like. But people love Stan Ashley McBride. And you know what's so funny is, like, I've never really come across her music. Like, it just doesn't come across my desk.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, like, the algorithm is
against
blocking
us.
Her.
But I feel like
she's
maybe
shadow banned.
We would love her.
Oh, no, for sure. According to this, we would love her. You know who I think was snubbed for Album of the Year? Now that I'm thinking back on the albums I used to listen to in full this year,
mm-hmm.
of course, Luke Combs was number one, but the Lady A album.
Yes, you are so right.
Right? It was so beautiful.
It was so stunning.
I saved all of the songs to my Spotify downloads, and I would listen to, like, all 16 of them at once.
Yeah.
So there's a snub right there.
Big snub.
Song of the Year. Bluebird, The Bones, Even Though I'm Leaving, I Hope You're Happy Now, More Hearts Than Mine. Ooh.
And you know what? I don't have a clear winner here. I mean, I love, I hope you're happy now.
But also that
But I love that because it was written by Luke Combs, but he doesn't sing on it. I love all these songs. I actually love Bluebird by Miranda Lambert. And I love The Bones. You know, I honestly can't pick a winner.
And I love Even Though I'm Leaving. And I love More Hearts Than Mine. Honestly, for me, I'm going to pick the underdog. I'm going
More Hearts
Than Mine.
Me too. Because even though I love Even Though I'm Leaving, I don't think it was a song of the year.
No, it's too personal. Like,
yeah.
No one's going to rock out to that when we're, like, all crying
sobbing
about our parents.
Yeah, right.
Okay, next up. Female Vocalist of the Year. Miranda Lambert, Ashley McBride, Maren Morris, Kacey Musgraves, Carrie Underwood.
I'm trying to think who did the most this year out of them. And I think it's Miranda Lambert.
Yeah, I think so too.
None of these people, Ashley McBride had an album, but Kacey didn't have a new album this year. Maren didn't have a new album this year. I think, and Miranda Lambert did, and she had some fabulous songs.
Yeah, this feels like a shoo-in for
Miranda
Lambert. Next, Male Vocalist of the Year, Eric Church, Luke Combs, Thomas Rhett, Chris Stapleton, Keith Urban.
Like, this is obviously
if he's going to win Entertainer of the Year, he has to win Male
so
Vocalist
true.
Of the Year. Right?
Has he ever won Entertainer of the Year?
No. I think this is his first time being nominated for it.
I think he was nominated
last year.
Okay, Garth Brooks won last year. Keith Urban won. Garth Brooks again. Luke Bryan.
Oh, okay.
God. They have got to shake it up. They haven't had a winner be a woman since 2011, and it was Taylor Swift, and then she won in 2009 again. But other than that, she's the only woman to have won it. I'm looking, 2004.
Wow.
Holy shit. 1992. I think maybe she's only... Oh, Reba won it in 1982. And that appears to be it.
Wow.
Oh, Shania Twain won it in 1999. They really got to kick it up.
They got to kick it up.
Although, oh, and the Chicks won.
Although this year it must go to Luke Combs.
I agree.
And then the vocal group of the year is Lady A, Little Big Town, Midland, Old Dominion, Rascal Flatts. I'm tempted to give it to Rascal Flatts because it's their last year of being nominated, probably. Because
they're retired.
Even though they just put out, like, an album.
And Looking Back is so good.
Looking Back is so good. But Lady A, for me, their album this year was it. They should be vocal group.
I don't know. Old Dominion is just, like, so consistently good.
They
like,
are.
Their songs are just beautiful.
And then vocal duo of the year, Brooks and Dunn, Brothers Osborne, Dan and Shay, Florida Georgia Line, Maddie and Tay.
Oh, I'm a Florida Georgia Line, like, girly girl. Like, I just think that they're fucking amazing. And I know they're, like, kind of cliche, like, with their, like, country vibe. Like, don't say it ain't country. But, like, I love it.
I know. I'm kind of a Maddie and Tay girly girl.
By the way, that song... Can your knees give out from praying so hard? Can you go blind from crying in the dark? Such a sad song.
Such a sad song. And then the other category that's very notable is New Artist of the Year. Jimmy Allen, Ingrid Andress, Gabby Barrett, Carly Pierce, Morgan Wallen. And I'm going to go left and say for me, it's Morgan Wallen. And I love every girl on this list.
Me too.
Every girl and every guy. But... Morgan Wallen is doing something for me that hasn't been done since Luke Combs.
By the way, I completely agree where it's like every single song, you know it's going to change your life. Like, you don't even have to listen to it. Like, you know it's amazing. And I honestly find it shocking that he's new artist material because I know Whiskey Glasses was only like last year and that was his first song. But he's just like selling out stadiums. Like, he's doing unprecedented work.
No, he is everything to me. Like, I think he is going to be in a few years Entertainer of the Year. Like, he is everything of the sort. Cover Me Up, This Bar, More Than My Hometown, Seven Summers. You guys, if you're not listening to these songs right now, you're in for a treat.
By the way, like, the country people who listen to this podcast, like, are 100% listening to Morgan Wallen. Like, I think people are listening, like, young people are listening to him more than, like, Luke Combs.
Yeah, and it's hard for me because, like, Ingrid Andress's album is one of, like, my top three albums of quarantine. Like, top three albums of this year, mm-hmm. no lie.
Mm-hmm.
And Morgan Wallen hasn't even put out an album this year. It's just, like, there's something about
him. And his vibe and his music and his hair.
And
I agree.
And his voice, everything about it. And you know Gabby Barrett. I love her. I love to see a nomination from her. She put out some great songs this year.
She did.
But Morgan Wallen hits different, you guys.
I agree.
Okay, wow. Those are your CMA Award nominees. I look forward to whatever sort of award show we get, and we look forward. May the best man win.
May the best man win.
And women. Next story, a little exciting couple news.
Very random couple news.
Minka Kelly and Trevor Noah are dating. Trevor Noah and Minka Kelly are a couple, and according to a new report, it's not a fling. They're very happy, an insider told People. It's a very serious relationship. The talk show host and the actress have not publicly confirmed their relationship. Page Six has reached out to their reps for comment.
Minka Kelly is and has been for the last, like, 10 years, the most eligible bachelorette in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't work. She's never in movies. But she's somehow, like, so famous because she's literally so beautiful. Like,
yeah.
I've never seen someone more beautiful in my entire life. And, like, you thought she couldn't get more beautiful when you fell in love with her as Lila Garrity on Friday Night Lights. But then she just, like, evolved into this woman, and she's so beautiful. And, like, there was a time where she was dating, I think, Derek Jeter. And, like,
yes.
That was everything of the sort.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a step up. Like, this is a real relationship, and I've actually had the pleasure of seeing Trevor Noah in person, and I can report that he is a big, fat, juicy ass. Like, it's so big, and I was at Soho House, and me and Margo...
I was there.
And we saw him get up to go to the buffet, and, like, you see Trevor Noah, and, like, you're excited, like, you just don't expect to see, like, a thick, juicy ass, and when he stood up, I was floored. Like, his ass is huge, but like in a good way. Like, it was just shocking, you know. And I feel like Minka Kelly likes a big juicy ass.
I think so too. I don't know why. You know, we talk about like these random couples that are a dime a dozen, really.
Yeah.
But like, to me, this makes a lot of sense.
Oh, you think?
I hope they have like a long, happy, prosperous relationship. Yes, I do.
I just don't know why. Like, I just thought he was married. Like, and like his relationship life was like settled.
Yeah, like if you knew that his hat was in the ring, like you would have added him.
Started pairing him up with people,
right?
When we play our fictional games,
right? You would have like added him to the rosters.
But I had literally no idea. Just like, I don't know. To me, he like he like screams stability. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's just been married for years and he has grandkids already, you know?
Yeah, but he's not but that he's not. Guy and maybe soon he will be.
I'm like jealous that he's dating Minka Kelly. She's so pretty.
She's so pretty. She's like, I mean, maybe we're just like conflating her character, Lila Garrity, yeah. like, with her.
We do have that problem.
We do. We have a serious problem. But she also starred in a Hallmark movie with Andie MacDowell called The Beach House. And you guys, like, I don't even think it was made by Hallmark. I think like Hallmark bought it because it's on a different level than Hallmark.
Really?
It's so fucking good.
Oh my God, does she look just like sensational?
She's sensational. Andie MacDowell is her mother. And
love
like,
that.
It's so good. If you're looking for a content like mediocre, that one's it. Okay, next up we have some celeb bebe news. Now that we're only doing a show a week, like so many babies are born every week.
So many babies.
Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom just welcomed their baby girl, and her name is absolutely adorable.
Adorable.
Her name is Daisy Dove Bloom.
Feel like Katy Perry was pregnant for 6,000 years. I'm really happy that she gave birth, and I absolutely love the name Daisy for three reasons. One, I just think it's a cute name. Two, her last name is Bloom, because Orlando Bloom, and it's like a Daisy Blooms, flower blooms. So cute. And three, Katy released a song a couple weeks ago called Daisies, and I actually think like most of Katy Perry's music is trash, but that was actually a cute song.
The new album, I listened to the first half. It's good. She's doing well. I think she's like feeling herself and she's in a really happy place, and that just translates in her music.
I love
the name Daisy Bloom, and I love how you just described it, and now it's making me feel like, and I love the name Dove. A bunch of celebrities have named their babies Dove recently, and I think it's a beautiful name. I kind of wish she had like saved that, because I think Daisy Bloom on its
own.
And
Dove Bloom.
And Dove Bloom.
Yeah, that's cute.
And then she, like...
Part of me is, like, dying inside, though, because I am, like, one of the last people aboard the ship of her and John Mayer. And I feel like, in a lot of ways, like, this Orlando Bloom thing is just, like, a bump in the road. And, like, she's gonna make her way back to John Mayer. And I feel like, you know, the more babies she has, like, the further I am. Like, my ship is never docking, and no, I'm just, like, lost
at
sea.
Your ship is lost at sea.
And it's upsetting.
I'm really sorry. I'm here for... For this, all of this.
Have you ever seen Orlando Bloom's penis? Like those pictures?
No, you know I don't look at celebrity nudes.
But it wasn't nudes. He was out and about at a nude beach. So
I'm sure he wasn't like thrilled that he was photographed. Mm. Also, Ed Sheeran is now a father. His wife, Cherry
Seaborn. She just announced her pregnancy like yesterday.
Well, now she's given birth to a baby named Lyra Antarctica Seaborn Sheeran.
This is giving Elon Musk's kid a run for her money.
Oh, yeah.
His money.
Maybe one day they'll
get married.
Get
Antarctica
together.
12 will be her name.
And also in some celeb baby news, Emma Roberts has confirmed her pregnancy. She's expecting her first child, a baby boy, with Garrett Hedlund.
Okay, Garrett Hedlund is just like permanently nestled in a, like an innermost corner of my heart, because he is in two of my favorite movies. And I feel like a lot of people actually don't know who he is, because he's like an actor for the craft. He doesn't have an Instagram. Like, he just loves to act. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. But he is the love interest in Country Strong against, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow. And then he's also in Georgia Rule.
Yes.
He's like that Bible nerd who Lindsay Lohan gives a blowjob to in the canoe.
Yes.
So I just like have such a special place in my heart for him. And I love Emma Roberts, and I like love this love. And I love that they're having a baby and it's a boy. And the pictures she posted on Instagram were so cute and precious. And she looks so like
they
bumpy.
Were stunning.
Stunning.
Also, he is in Pan. I don't know if you ever watched it.
I
weirdly watched it recently. And also, I feel as though he should be in Yellowstone. I think Casey Dutton looks a lot like him, and I feel like Garrett might have auditioned. And if he didn't, then his manager needs to be fired.
Yeah.
Because that's the show for him.
It's just amazing to me. Like, he's an anomaly, because he has managed to stay a working actor in Hollywood without ever, like, doing press, having social media, going to events. Like, I think he literally, like, lives under a bridge. Like, it's so weird.
No, he does it for the love
of the craft
of doing it.
And by the way, and now he's like, now he has something else to do it for, like his child.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Love to see it. So those are the Fast Five stories, and now I'm providing a bonus story. This one's really for Claudia. It also requires like this photograph that I'm going to show you that we will definitely, I know we always say we'll post on Instagram.
We do always say
this is what our Instagram needs, just some eye candy. Peter Facinelli lost 30 pounds during quarantine. I feel leaner. I feel...
Ah! Oh, my God. I'm dying. That doesn't even look like him.
He looks smoking, you guys.
Oh, my God. I'm fucking dead.
Like...
Daddy Cullen.
Daddy Cullen. It's sickening the Cullens down.
Oh, my God. And you know what it is? He looks very tan in the photo, and as a vampire, he's, like, green.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He looks so handsome. Does he have a girlfriend?
Also, this photo is a campaign to raise awareness for prostate cancer. So, like, you can feel good about ogling this photo because it's doing good.
Oh, he has a wife. Oh, my God. Peter Facinelli was married to Jenny Garth for 12 years.
What?
That is insane.
That is insane. But Peter Foch is loving his healthy new look. The 46-year-old actor says that he is physically in better shape than he's ever been and opened up about losing weight while quarantining amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Everything's kind of shut down right now, and I wanted to focus on myself, he told People exclusively. So I did a lot of meditating, a lot of reading, and a lot of growing personally, and just wanted to physically see if I could get as physically fit as I could. I wish I had had that experience.
Peter Foch also, in January of 2020, right before quarantine, got engaged to his girlfriend Lillianne Harrison.
Damn,
she's Esme so lucky.
Esme is quaking.
Esme is quaking. Wait, he, like, doesn't age because, well, he really looks like a vampire. I mean, I'm just, like, so obsessed with him.
He is Carlisle.
He is Carlisle.
Here's another pic for you.
You guys, these pictures are so sexy. Like, literally nude. Oh, my God. I'm sad. Peter Foch, he looks so good.
Looks so good. And so I just thought you deserved that sweet treat.
I so appreciate that sweet treat. It was so sweet and such a treat. Okay, now let's dump. I was going to say dive or jump, but I guess we'll just dump into our TV recap segment, which is brought to you by Honey. We all shop online, and we've seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout. But thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. They range from sites that have tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. So basically, how Honey works, it is a browser extension that is totally free. You download it. It doesn't bother you. Every time you're shopping, right before you press check out, this little box pops up and it's like, hi, I'm Honey. I'm a reminder. I can save you money. You click one button, one, two, they scour the internet for all the coupon codes and they'll apply the one that works and that saves you the most money. And you can literally save so much money every time you shop online. And since, like, all we do now is shop online, even though we have nowhere to go, it is now more pertinent than ever that you get Honey. I have shopped at Sephora, Bloomingdale's, Revolve. They really, they work on pretty much every website. They have found it's over $17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. So if you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in seconds. By getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and be supporting this podcast if you go to joinhoney.com/toast. So you can get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/toast. That's joinhoney.com/toast. Thank you, Honey, for sponsoring our TV recap segment.
Love it. Okay, let's start with Beverly Hills. We had our season finale. It's the big culmination. Denise is suing and she stopped filming. Cease and desists are here. Not suing, but, you know, getting litigious.
Can I just say, like, they really hyped up, like, Denise stopping filming with the girls. Like, Lisa Vanderpump stopped filming with the girls. Like, she didn't go on the trip. Denise didn't make it into the last episode.
Yeah, no, like Denise took off Christmas and New Year's and then was back at Rinna's house, like, literally going into the Lion's Den. So I agree. She didn't show up for that party at Dorit's, which maybe was supposed to be the finale.
Definitely.
But Erica wasn't there either, so...
Yeah.
And she didn't go to New York to see Erica.
The episode was very choppy.
It was very choppy, but I also think, like, maybe they had a plan for it to end in a certain way, and then COVID. So I don't mind the choppiness. I just, it didn't feel as much as, like, this big bombshell, but I do feel extremely conflicted because all season, I've really been riding for Denise, and, like, even though she's not super credible, I really feel like Garcelle was like, I just want her to be credible, like, to be, like, a believable person that you can root for, and she's just not being that person.
At all.
But I really want that for her. So, like, on the one hand, I've been, like, on Denise's side, like, this is not anyone's business. This is too personal. But then on the other hand, when Dorit, Rinna, and Garcelle had dinner and Rinna was like, she's going to find a way to put this on us and, like, make us the mean girls. I'm like, whoa, that's what she did. Yeah. And I feel, like, played.
Really? You know what? I heard Lisa Rinna say that and I didn't feel, like, spooked at all because, to be honest, the reason why I feel for Denise has nothing to do with what Denise is saying. Like, and you know what? I came to this conclusion very much on my own. And the conclusion that I came to is, like, regardless of whether or not Denise is lying, which she 100% is, like, it's, we don't even have to say whether or not, like, she's lying. I think that the women going after this particular story is a really low blow because it has to do with someone's sexuality. And that's just a line you don't cross in society. And I didn't think that we were going to cross it in Beverly Hills, and they did. So the conclusion I came to when taking Denise's side, I came to completely on my own because my moral compass showed me that way. You know, I didn't find like Denise's master manipulation in the media brought me to this conclusion. You know, I didn't read anything in the media. I came to this conclusion after watching the show.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like, on the one hand, I was like ready to be like, oh, you know what, Denise has me played. Like, she plays this like innocent person who I just like want to defend. But then when she went to Rinna's house and she was talking to Rinna, and I'm like, okay, I see both sides right now. Whose side am I going to take? And then Rinna said to her, you're so angry. And she was smiling. My skin was literally crawling. I was like, back on. I can't quit Denise.
No, no. Lisa Rinna bothered me the most this episode. And I think that she wasn't involved in the episode a lot, but I think a lot of the stirring tonight, last night or whenever the episode was on, had to do with Kyle. And here's my hypothesis. So we get to Dorit's party, which was beautiful, by the way. I love her house.
I love her house.
This like weird non-alcoholic champagne that was like not even a storyline and made no sense. It was actually perfect for Teddy and Kim Richards. Like, I actually was glad that they both had something to drink. I thought it was perfect. So yeah, at this party, which was beautiful, you know, housewives old and new show up. Marisol Patton came with Adrian. Did you see her?
No.
Real Housewives
they
of Miami.
They are friends.
So strange. And okay. They look alike. So at first I was like, is that Marisol?
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, they're very similar.
Very strange. So they showed up. Everyone gets together. Garcelle and her man are being so cute in the car.
So cute.
And by the way, I can't believe at the end it said they didn't work out. I thought they were literally going to get married the next day.
I know. I mean, some things don't work out, but I'm glad that Denise gave us that car scene by not showing up.
Yes. So Denise doesn't show up. And all the women at first are like, oh, I'm so offended. And to be honest, like, they're acting all shocked. Like, what could have happened that she's not coming? Have you seen what's been happening the last few weeks? Like, the possibility of her not showing up, they know the reason why. Because she doesn't want to have any sort of confrontation. Acting like they're so worried about her family emergency is such bullshit. The only person who has a real, like, legitimate gripe with Denise about not showing up is Garcelle. Because she stood her up and she made her look like an asshole and she missed the magic trick or whatever. Yeah. So, that I understand.
I understand that, too. But I feel like Denise, we know, didn't show up. She was planning on coming. Mm-hmm. Like, she didn't show up because Brandy told her she was going to be there. And all the women want Denise and Brandy to talk so that they don't have to do the talking about them. And Denise doesn't want that. And I don't think she needs to have that conversation. Brandy is not a cast member. Denise does not owe her that conversation mm-hmm. on camera. I think if Brandy was never coming, and no, and also it's like, who told Brandy to come?
So here...
I believe that it's Kyle.
Me too. That's what I was about to say. So Kyle is the master manipulator of this entire episode. Dorit had no idea that Brandy was going to be at her house. And Dorit is a true Denise stan. She would never have allowed that. But Kyle invited Kim. Like, it is so obviously Kyle stirring the pot here. And I feel like she's... Honestly, a lot of the pot stirring has gotten blamed on Teddy and Lisa, which I agree with. But Kyle needs to be a part of that.
Yeah. Kyle is very much a part of it. Like, and I think she just doesn't, like, say the wrong things or get too emotional, and so you don't realize that she has so much invested in it.
She has but, become a mini LVP.
She's the one who invited Kim over when Kim was going to dinner with Brandy, and, like, everything kind of comes back to Kyle. Yep. So I understood why Denise didn't come. I think Denise would have come if Brandy wasn't there. It would have been another night of talking about it. And then when I think it was, like, Rinna who was like, you need to talk about it with him, like... Denise spent like a week in Rome just talking about this. Yep. Like, what more do you guys want? They like, we need to iron out. Every time you go to talk about something, it doesn't get resolved. So like, what? I don't know.
No, and they did resolve it. And then they went back to New York and Beverly Hills and pretended like there was no resolution.
Right. And now they pretend like these text messages show that there's an intimate relationship. And I think no one... I don't feel that way. Like,
no.
It shows that they were friends, but we all knew they were friends.
The thing is like, I have now moved past whether or not who I believe, whatever. I don't care that Brandy and Denise had sex. And you know what? I do believe that they did. None of that matters to me because it is absolutely no one's business. And I think a lot of the women have showed their true colors in trying to get the truth. They're also concerned about the truth, but like, who fucking cares? Like, what someone else does in their personal life. Like, Lisa is on this journey for the truth. But what does this particular truth do for Lisa?
Right. I feel like, honestly, we all know the truth.
Yeah.
Move on.
Move on. It's so stupid. And I've started to hate some of these women because of what they're doing to Denise. And I'm now even more, after last night's episode, firm in my stance with Denise.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What I did think was interesting was when the party ended and Garcelle got back in the car, you saw the producer talking to Garcelle, and it's just interesting to see how, like, they try and stir shit up.
Like, he was being super producer-y. I was like, is this a Bachelor?
Yeah, no, and he was, like, trying to get Garcelle to turn on Denise. He's like, it's kind of shitty that, like, she would not show up after she told you she was gonna.
Yeah.
Like, and I just thought it was interesting that we saw, that's what,
like,
they talk
producer
about.
Producer involvement.
When they talk about the producers, like, it's just, like, little nudging like that, and I thought it was fascinating.
I thought it was fascinating, too.
Oh, and then when they're at drinks after Christmas, talking about she told producers that she wasn't coming. I just think it's interesting how the producers have now become like a character.
Yeah, but it's also, it's weird because on the one hand, it just feels like, oh, it's just, you know, we're going to show up to Dorit's party or whatever. But no, it's like really a set,
you know,
it's like, I'm not coming to work today.
Yep.
So that is interesting. But I look forward to the reunion. I think it'll be really interesting. I hope this gets put to bed because it's not something I think anyone really enjoys.
No, not at all. And I really want Denise to make a return on the show. And I think that she has like a sour taste in her mouth and she could walk away. And I really don't want her to.
Yeah. But I also think she's a tough cookie and she'll stand her ground. She just doesn't want to be talking to Brandy. Like, and I understand that. Like, Brandy's not on the show and she's not going to make it back on the show on Denise's back. Denise will not let that happen.
Will not allow it. Yeah.
So that's that. Let's talk New York.
I actually liked the episode of New York. I think that this episode was really highlighting the Roni problem.
Oh, that's so interesting. Say your theory because I have another take.
And I think it really made clear, like, who needs to stay and who needs to go. Because the really only big event was Leah's Married to the Mob 15th anniversary party, which was, like, a real downtown streetwear young party. And I think the reaction of all the women who walked in was, Leah is the future of the show. She is young. She is fresh. Everyone loves her. And they're obviously moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So all the women walking in their fur coats, like, not really feeling like this was, they were feeling out
their
of place.
Their scene.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating how each of them reacted to it. And I think the fact that Dorinda was just, like, nonstop talking about people in their sweatpants, like, is why she had to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sonia running into the young men and not even saying hi to her friends is why she is an evergreen perfect housewife.
Mm-hmm.
She is a chameleon. She adapts anywhere she goes, and she is perfect, and she must stay. Leah, of course. I actually think Luann was, like,
amazing.
Down with what was going
she
on.
She was down with it. Okay, continue. And then I have a similar theory.
And I don't really have a theory about Ramona because she left.
Right.
But I don't think she would have liked the party.
I agree. Okay. What I took away from this episode is, like, something about this episode and this party that Leah was throwing, like, downtown, super young scene, like, highlighted how some of the existing ladies, like, how and why, like, they're so iconic in their ways. Like, when Sonia Morgan was with, like, she was with a guy and he said he was drinking Captain Morgan last night, and she's like, you were with Captain Morgan last night and Lady Morgan now.
So funny.
So iconic. Stays. When Luann said something so funny to me when she was talking with Ramona earlier in the day about Elise, and she goes, I had her number the minute she walked in the door, and it wasn't 212.
Yes, I agree.
And it's like, that is the iconic attitude, the iconic attitude from the New York Housewives that we need more of. So
I mean, the only person to me who felt even more out of place than anyone was Elise. Like, what was she doing at
this
party?
Oh my God, I have no idea. And then even Ramona, like, walking in and leaving, like, that's Ramona Singer.
Yeah, it was actually
and
pretty
so
funny.
I feel like it really highlighted the best of certain women, like Luann and Sonia, and then also showed the people who need to go. Dorinda, also her birthday dinner was, like, tragic.
I have a paragraph about
Luann
her.
Luann on the mic at her birthday dinner highlights why Luann is iconic.
I agree. And, you know, Luann is, like, she's not too proud to do anything. And I think that's part of being a really good housewife is, like, Ramona and Dorinda, like, hold themselves to the standard where, like, they think, like, Dorinda thinks that she is, like, the wife of Richard. Like, they all have these, like, idealized versions of themselves and they don't let that go. And I think, like, they walk into this dungeon, they called it, and it's different, and that's what parties are like. That's what the parties like that I go to, like,
yeah,
those are what young New York parties are like. And the fact that they're not able to just kind of get out of this, like, image of themselves is why I don't think they have a long shelf life on the show.
But I do think that some of them are able to get out of this image of themselves, and some of them aren't. But I also think that someone like Ramona, who is in her 60s, who is closer to Leah's mother's age, isn't going to go to that party and act like a teenager.
Agreed.
Which would be disingenuous. So is that the word?
Yeah.
Or not genuine, whatever. And so her coming and being a snooty 60-year-old Upper East Side woman also works.
Yes. I thought that Leah's mom looked more like a housewife than Leah did. And, like, she fit in with the women so perfectly. I don't know why the women, like, could not get over her mom. They, like, kept calling her granola. Like, she just looks like her mom. What was the big deal?
I don't know what they expected.
Right.
But we met Leah and her mom, like, kind of at the same time. So yeah. We never got an opportunity to think, like, oh, what would Leah's mom be like?
Yeah. I literally, my notes are, Sonia entering the party and going straight to the young guys is why she should never get fired. She's a chameleon. Like, she can just adapt to any, she could be an Upper East Side lady. She could be a downtown girl. Like, I just felt like this episode, like, cemented for me, like, Lady Morgan is a top tier housewife.
I completely agree. I felt the same way. I felt the same about Luann. And I'm feeling certain, and Leah said it in this episode too, I'm feeling certain that Ramona is iconic. Like, she just, for better or for worse. And Leah said, when Ramona was saying something, I think Ramona, like, accidentally insulted Leah's mom by saying, like,
she didn't, yeah, she just wasn't what I expected. Yeah.
And Leah was,
she,
like,
wrapped it up perfectly. What's wrong with Ramona?
Yeah, she was like, Ramona has no idea that she is being, like,
the rudest
so
person
fucking
alive.
Rude. But yeah. That's Ramona.
Agreed.
So, and also, like, that is, there's something about those women, Luann, Ramona, Sonia, that are really quintessential New York, that New York attitude,
yes.
Which is what we do want on the show. I don't think everyone on the show should be like Leah. Leah would never say, I have her number and it's not 212.
No,
you know,
it's
she
so
would
funny.
Never think like that. But, like, there's something about that New York attitude that needs to stay on the show. And that is what we saw last night. And
I agree.
I think Dorinda thinks she has that attitude.
Yes.
But she's just got a mean attitude.
I totally agree. Let's talk about Dorinda's birthday party. Because the first thing I noticed was Hannah, her daughter, was wearing a jacket that were the matching.
They
were the
triggered. I was so triggered.
The matching pants to those terrible, like, knitted pants she wore in Mexico, Dorinda. Hannah was wearing
and
the matching,
like,
jacket.
It was like, oh my God. It wasn't bad enough the first time. Now we're getting a whole coat.
Watching this party, like, really brought me back to a time pre-COVID, because it literally looked like the most filthy place, like the most filthy people, like, all sweating on each other. I was just like, I can't believe we used to do this.
I know. And it was like, this is my worst kind of dinner party, because in general, I'm not, like, huge on dinner parties, but in my older age, I'm getting more into them, you know? And it's like, the seats were so close together. Mm-hmm. Everyone, I could smell the vodka on their breath.
Yep.
So they were talking to each other. I'm like, all I could smell is Colin Cowie smelling Ramona's breath. Like,
and they're literally eating from family-style plates. So it's like everyone's slobbering all over their forks and putting the fork in the meat. Like, it was just, honestly, COVID gave me, like, a whole new, I don't know if I would have reacted this way pre-COVID, but, like, this party was disgusting.
And also, it wasn't in a private dining room. But I think the place,
that was the other thing.
I think this place is, like, an institution in New York. I've never been there, but it was kind of reminding me of, like, Sammy's Romanian.
Yes, I agree.
Which is, like, a similar sort of vibe with the vodka and the
Russian,
dancing.
Yeah.
And so you don't get a private room there because you're there for the ambiance. And so
but
I get that.
But you're not filming a TV show when you go.
Right.
And them getting a microphone and making speeches in the middle of a crowded restaurant, like, made no sense to me.
No, like, where did Luann find that microphone?
No, I don't know. Because John gave a speech without a microphone. Dorinda gave a speech without a microphone. Luann grabs one from her purse and suddenly is on a microphone. But I'd say Luann was being an icon at the party because I just love that, like, she kept the phone thing in the back of her mind.
I love a grudge.
Like, she kept the phone thing from Mexico. Like, Dorinda doesn't want us to be on our phones at the table. And that was an informal breakfast on vacation. Like, very informal. Now she kept it in the back of her mind. Not only is Dorinda on a phone at her own birthday party, which is a seated dinner party for adults, she's on Sonia's phone, like, pretending to help her with her apps. Like,
right. And also, like, not to get too into the weeds, but, like, Dorinda thought she was closing Sonia's app to save battery. She was just exiting out of her Safari tabs.
Yeah.
Which, like, of course, there's going to be 5,000. Sonia's never done that in her life.
No.
And that's not really, like, what's wasting Sonia's battery.
1,000%. But we're
going to, like, get technical.
I love that Luann kept that little bit of information in the back of her mind, because it was such a hypocritical thing for Dorinda to do and say at the time. And I won't let it go. Like, if she picks up her phone at the reunion and, like, she's sitting, I'm literally going to say something. Like, it's just, it bothered me so much then. And obviously bothered Luann too, because she kept it. But, like, Ramona sitting at dinner next to Colin Cowie Ramona sitting next to Colin Cowie at dinner talking about Dorinda's anger issues, and Colin Cowie's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I know. Also, I saw this article this morning that I wanted to share because I think you would find it interesting.
I read it as well.
So, as we know, Dorinda has been fired from Housewives, and there's another article that we read earlier this week that we also need to talk about, which is about her apartment.
Yes.
But before we get there, Page Six has an exclusive report that Dorinda Medley's turkey baster trash talk was the last straw for Andy Cohen. Dorinda Medley's off-color quip about former Real Housewife castmate Tinsley using a kitchen tool to get pregnant didn't sit well with her Bravo boss, Andy Cohen, an insider told Page Six. The cruel comment, quote, offended the Watch What Happens Live host and executive producer so much that it factored into her firing last week, the source said. It was part of sealing her fate. So I'm not sure if this is totally true, but it sounds kind of true because we know Andy had a baby via surrogate. Mm-hmm. And so this is probably a comment he would find offensive.
And Andy has, like, been working before quarantine. He worked with Governor Cuomo because, like, surrogacy in New York is not legal. Like, fertility is, like, weirdly, like, a big part of, like, Andy's everyday life. And he's, like, a big advocate for it. And this was such a disgusting, low, below-the-belt comment for anyone to make, let alone someone with a platform. And I think probably Andy did not feel good that he had been the person to give her that platform. And I actually am glad that this was a part of the reason why she was firing, because for me, it was the reason why I was down with her.
Yeah, I totally hear that.
But the other article that we were talking about is even more interesting because Dorinda lives, she moved, everyone knows she sold her apartment in the city and it was like this big transition for her, and she lives in this rental building that actually I looked for an apartment in, and it's a fabulous building. And Page Six said that she has this kind of partnership with the building, whether she gets rent free or a discounted rent on.
She gets the deal that they said that she gets is that she lives in the $10,000 a month apartment for free and gets paid $10,000 every month to live there. That's what Page Six reports.
Well, so yeah, it never made sense because she lives in an apartment far nicer than the one that she moved from, and it never made sense. And she was always tagging her building, which is like such a dangerous thing to do, but then it made sense that it was this partnership, and it's honestly a great partnership for them and for her. But now that she's not on the show, and I'm sure the show was an integral part of that deal, filming there, hosting events there, I think it's fascinating, and I'm curious what's going to happen. Like, is she going to be evicted or something?
But I mean, she's still kind of an influencer, so if they're happy with the social media tags, maybe they'll just, like, amend her deal. Also, it's worth noting that she didn't sell her original apartment. She puts it up for rent.
Oh.
So she could always move back there.
Okay, that's good.
So that is interesting. It was interesting to watch last night's episode through the lens of
her being fired.
Her being fired, because it just made me, like, it sort of lightened my load. Like, I just felt like I could just enjoy her final scenes and move on.
And make peace with it.
All
right, let's do Potomac.
Great. This was such a good episode.
It really was.
We got to Monique's lake house. It was everything I hoped it would be and more. Yes. Because there was also a guest house. There were golf carts involved.
It was sickening.
There was a pickup truck. There was T'Challa. The whole gang was here.
And you know what? I liked the vibe of the trip. I feel like everyone went. There's always two trips every season, a local and an international.
Yes.
And I actually really like the local ones. I feel like they always come from a place. And I liked what Monique kept saying. It's like, I'm such a different person that I was last year and when I met most of these women. Like, I feel like, let's reintroduce ourselves.
I loved
the message.
And I love it for the Wendy inclusion that we've been saying needs to take place. Yes. Like, we are finally all sitting down and getting to know Wendy.
And she just, you know, steamrolled her way right in.
Yeah. At first, I was like, okay, cool. I understood how she was feeling even before she had to re-explain and explain why she would be upset when she has a younger child at home that Ashley's child is there and hers isn't. Like, that, to me, went without saying.
It's unfair. And I do think unequivocally it is weird that Ashley brought her baby and, like, her best friend who's also her nanny. And I didn't like the scene where Michael, like, shamed her into taking, like, if she wanted to get away from the baby and Michael had to work, like, they have enough means to get a nanny. Like, it could be done. And honestly, I feel like part of Ashley, like, would have been okay to, like, she's saying how she needs to get back to who she is. So I feel like this trip could have been a good opportunity for her to do that. But, like, her husband fully shamed her. And he's like, you're taking the baby.
Yeah, that was weird. But I also think it, at the end of the day, just comes down to Ashley's tenure on this show. Like, she's knows Monique to know, like, that she could call her and be like, oh, I'm worried about bringing the baby. So Monique said, I'm worried about not being with my baby. So Monique said, bring the baby. But mm-hmm. Wendy just heard girls trip. She's new to this group. She's going on the girls trip. That just means leave your baby at home.
Yeah.
She never even
thought.
It never even occurred to her that, like, she could bring the baby. So I understand her showing up and being confused and sort of jealous, also see how that just happened.
Yeah, no. I feel like, if anything, like, she should be mad at herself for just not asking.
Yeah.
And maybe even a little mad at Monique for not offering. But it is honestly not Ashley's problem that Wendy is in this situation.
Yes, I totally agree.
It just seems like an unfortunate coincidence.
And for her to just, like, come out so hot and so fast, like, why is about Michael and this and that in the kitchen, it was reminding me of Candace's first season when she just got into fights with everyone over nothing.
Yeah, and then the thing is like, I can understand her frustration, you know, she's away from her baby, she did all this prep. I mean, I see the prep that it takes for Olivia to go out for lunch. Like, right. It's a lot. So to pump and get all these things in place for you leaving for 3 days, it's frustrating, and I totally am sympathetic, and I agree with her. And that's what everyone was saying. It's like, it's not what you said, it's how you said it. And she just wouldn't acknowledge even the smallest bit of wrongdoing, which is my least favorite quality in a housewife.
It was very Candace-y, the whole thing.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking of, Candace continues to just be on boring. My shit list. she's getting further and further to a point where I refuse to discuss.
No, now she's having a baby and getting a new house. Like, it's always
I will no longer be discussing her personal scenes.
Okay, fine.
And I will discuss her involvement in the group a little bit, mm-hmm. but she is on her way out for me. Like, I will be shocked, floored, if she finds a way to, like, come back from the season and be on next season.
The thing is that there's this, like, huge moment in the season, which we know, I believe, is a blow-up between Candace and Monique. And Candace is very much a part of the storyline this season. So I don't think she'll be gone next season, as much as I would love to imagine it into reality.
It's just getting so much worse, as are the outfits. Like, oof. Now I'm just in a place where I can't not notice. And it's really, I blame Beverly Hills. They are just making me take stock of everyone's outfits, Dorinda's pants, mm-hmm. like... I am just noticing everything. And the outfit that Candace wore for the dinner in Monique's Coachella. Lake house, like this Coachella flower crown. Like, if she had taken the headband off, I could have
lived with it.
Maybe, like...
Made peace.
Made peace.
Yeah.
Made peace with the outfit. But, like, her talking to Giselle, while Giselle is wearing, like, a leather
She's
skirt.
She's going to a punk nightclub. And this other girl's going to Coachella.
And they're both at a lake house. So they're both wrong. The yeah. outfits were just, like, so, like, on their own, they're bad. Together, they're worse. And no, when you put
together,
them in
they
the,
make no sense.
When you put them in the context of the house, it's like, what is going on here?
Well, I'm glad that the outfits were slightly addressed when Karen Huger said that Giselle is the worst dressed and that sometimes she's embarrassed to be seen in public with her. Like, that was a little bit of a stretch, but I agree. At least someone is taking note. In my opinion, I know you think Candace is the worst dressed.
No, I don't.
I think Giselle is.
I think Giselle's the worst dressed, but I think that Candace, like... She sometimes she looks so cute. Like, if she's just taking that headband off, her outfit is cute.
Fine.
Like,
it's fine.
It's not my favorite, but it's fine. But I just, like, I don't get it.
None of them dressed for an evening at the lake. None of them dressed for an outdoor dinner. Wendy was wearing a snakeskin bodycon dress. Like, that's just not what you wear to the lake.
No, you wear a summer dress, or you could even wear jean shorts and a blouse or a t-shirt. Like, it's a
casual.
Lake.
It's the backyard.
Yeah, you guys keep saying you're in the woods, you're in the middle of nowhere. Why are you putting on... statement earrings.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the whole episode was centered around this fight between Wendy and Ashley, and it started in the kitchen and it really finished at dinner. And, like, honestly, I was sympathetic for Wendy. Like, I feel like she was just mad at in the beginning.
She's feeling misunderstood and she's back into a corner and she's coming out swinging, and I get it. But
by the second part of the dinner, like, she totally lost me.
Yeah, she took it. It didn't need to become this big thing. Like, your first fight shouldn't be the biggest and the baddest.
I agree. And at the same time, while she has a legitimate gripe at the circumstances, it's literally the last person whose fault it is Ashley.
Yeah.
She's just jealous that Ashley now has a baby here and a nanny, and, like, she didn't have to leave and she didn't have to pump. Like, and I get it. I totally get it. She's mad at the situation, but I don't think you could blame a particular person. And if you were to blame a particular person, it would not be Ashley.
Yeah. Everyone just always comes for Ashley so hard and fast. And I feel like they think they underestimate her.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to be in a fight with Ashley.
No.
She does not
back down.
Oh, wait. She always holds her own.
Yeah.
I just want to say the car ride to the lake house
was the best part.
Monique, Giselle, and Karen, like, those are squad goals. I don't think that we've ever seen the three of them isolated together, but, like, that's who I want to see.
I agree. I think literally my favorite scene of the episode was them getting ready at the house, Chris helping them into the car, T'Challa taking a shit on the pickup truck, and then them all getting in the car and just sitting with T'Challa. It was my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, them, like, being in the pickup truck, like, Giselle snacking in the back.
Yeah.
It was really nice to see.
And I did actually laugh out loud at the slow-mo of T'Challa landing on Wendy.
Oh my God.
So funny.
It was so funny. It's actually, like, I mean, I don't think I'd ever personally get a bird, and I understand why the women are
confused
and not into the bird, but putting a bird on a Real Housewives trip, it's a recipe for success.
It adds an element of laughter
of humor,
and entertainment. I totally
that's
agree.
Never been done before, and I appreciate it.
And the subtitles with T'Challa, which is usually something I would think is so stupid, I actually find really funny.
Yeah, I can't wait till T'Challa can start speaking, and then he might repeat Monique things that Monique has
yes.
said. That's how, you know, a lot of movies people get into trouble.
I was a little miffed because last week's preview for this week made it seem like the Michael Stripper thing at least happened this week, and it didn't. And I felt like when it said to be continued at the end of the episode, I was like, I feel like we just started.
Yeah, I know. And, like, next week, the husbands will be coming. Like, next week is definitely the good stuff. But this week's episode was good because we got to get to know Wendy a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And while I wasn't necessarily on her side, I think that she's a heavy hitter.
Yeah, and she fights, like, hard.
Yeah, she doesn't back down, which is good.
Yeah, some people are, like, funny and interesting, but when it comes to a fight, they can't hold their own. And I felt like, even though I disagreed with her, like, Wendy, she had quick one-liners, address me properly. Like, she had good shtick in the fight, which is
a good quality.
It's a necessary quality.
I actually really think all of the women of Potomac hold their own, sometimes to a fault. Like, Candace
Yes.
Never gives up, never gives in.
Yeah.
Karen, Giselle, Monique, Ashley. And I guess that's why none of them can move on from a fight, because no one will ever back down.
I mean, this has become like a trend through different housewives. It's like, especially when they're on vacation, to like play a game.
Yeah.
And this one I actually liked the beginning, getting to know more about the women like on a real level. I thought the nose job comment from Giselle was funny. I really don't think she was trying to be shady. I think she thought it was like common knowledge.
Right, because they will put the picture side by side and it doesn't take a surgeon to realize that she has had a nose job.
Which is not a big deal.
No, not a big deal at all. And Candace wasn't denying it, but she also wasn't addressing it. But it's like, it's extremely clear that she had one. Just own it. In a situation like that, I understand plastic surgery is personal, you don't have to talk about it, but when it's so obvious like that, it's really not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
She could have just owned it. It would have brought them all like closer. And I think a lot of women at that table have had plastic surgery.
Yeah, and there's not a big deal at all.
And so I think that it's kind of old-fashioned to, you know, be so
coy.
Yeah.
We're so beyond that as a society.
Right. Especially as Real Housewives.
Especially as Real Housewives. But all in all, it was a good episode. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes me excited for next week, obviously.
I know. But, like, we've said that now, like, 3 weeks I know, in
but
a row.
Yes. I was excited for this week, and it landed, and it hit. But, like, next week is the big week. Yes. Michael's at the strip club. He has a wife and a boyfriend.
That scene with Michael just really bothered me at home.
I know.
Even though he was, like, being nice, because she's spoken about how she's, like, in this weird place and she's feeling so insecure in her body and she's just trying to get back to herself. And I actually thought Michael was being really sweet when he was just like complimenting her body and she was like so like humbled.
Happy, yeah.
Like it was cute. But then he just turned and he's like, you're taking the baby, right? It was just like, you take the baby.
Yeah.
Like, it bothered me.
I agree. And he could have been like, I take the baby. Don't worry. Have a girl's weekend. Feel yourself.
Yes.
You know, get back to yourself. That's kind of what Ashley needed.
And that's what would have been nice.
She didn't need to be in a room with a bunk bed and a crib and a friend nanny.
And the whole friend nanny thing I think is confusing, because if it was her friend, how weird to make your friend like, this friend wasn't at dinner, like she was in the room feeding the baby.
It's very weird. Michael could have stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, that was disappointing, but all in all, good episode.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's jump into Dear Toasters, our advice segment, which is brought to you by stamps.com. As we slowly adjust to the new normal, we still need to be smart about how we do business. Luckily, there's stamps.com to make things easier. Thousands of small business owners have discovered the benefits of Stamps.com in recent months. With Stamps.com, you can print postage on demand and avoid going to the post office. They offer UPS services now with discounts up to 62%, and you'll save money with discounted rates you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the mailing and shipping services you need right to your comfort of your own home or office through your computer. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, an online seller shipping out product, or just working from home and need to mail something, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. You can print off your computer, official U.S. postage, 24/7, for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, just leave it for your mail carrier, schedule a pickup, or drop it in the mailbox. It's truly that simple. Saves you time and money, and you get great discounts too, like 5 cents off stamps, up to 62% off USPS and UPS shipping rates. And right now, our listeners can get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in toast. That's stamps.com, enter toast.
Love it. Love stamps.com. Let's hear the DTs.
The Dear Toasters today are fabulous. And if you ever want to write into our advice segment, Dear Toasters, all you have to do is email deartoasters@gmail.com. We always keep it anonymous and you can write in anything and you'll get some
Decent, advice.
Eclectic advice.
Yeah. You'll get two girls discussing your problem, maybe, realizing that you have an even bigger problem.
Right, maybe never coming to a resolution, but it's nice to not feel alone.
Yeah.
Hi, Claudia and Jackie. Love you both so much.
Thank you. We love you too.
I'm in a weird situation. My boyfriend and I were set up by our mutual friend. We've been dating for a few months and have had zero issues, and we love each other. Recently, he told me that him and our mutual friend actually hooked up, made out, a few times a couple years before we started dating. For reference, they were freshmen and sophomores in college at the time. They hooked up and are now a couple months out of college. They had never mentioned this to me before, but I feel super weird about it. Like, they obviously are good friends and have moved on from that point in their lives, but it still makes me feel weird, and neither of them mentioned it to me, which I feel like maybe they should have before we started dating. It's making me really upset thinking about it, even though I'm not worried that anything would happen between them again. How do I handle this? Am I crazy? How do I process this? It makes me sick to my stomach thinking that if I had known this before we had dated, then maybe it would have turned me off to him. Thanks so much, a distressed toaster. I don't think you're a distressed toaster. I honestly think you're a dramatic toaster. It's like not a big deal. It's like a little weird that they didn't tell you, but like you're like, you're at that stage in your relationship where, like, everything's going good and you're, like, looking for a problem.
Maybe, but I don't know. This really could be one of two things. Like, they are friends. They hooked up a few times in college and it means literally absolutely nothing. Like, I'm sure everyone can think of a person that they've, like, made out with a few times that, like, they would
feel nothing for.
I feel nothing. I would set up with a friend. Oh, well, you know what?
They're a great guy.
I actually forgot that, like, we used to hook up. So maybe that's a detail you need to know. Or it's like they'll always have a thing for each other.
But if, okay, let's say they always have a thing for each other. Do you go out of your way to set up someone who you, like, secretly have a thing for? No.
No, in fact, I would tell a friend.
I would ambush it.
Listen, like, there's an embargo list. He's on it. You can't.
And even if subconsciously, like, I didn't want to admit that I liked this guy.
I would never
go out of my way to set him up because I know in the back of my head I like him and I want to keep him as an option. So, like, let him be single forever.
Yeah, you know what? If I had to put my money on it, I think that it's a nothing thing.
It's a nothing burger.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, though. Good luck.
Good luck. I hope that is the case, and I'm happy for you and your relationship. And you know what? You know what you have to do, though, honestly, because there's no way to know. You just have to trust.
Believe.
You have to trust your partner. That's what relationships are based on. So you know what? It might wind up biting in the ass. You might be wrong. He might have a candle for this girl still.
Yeah.
But you'll get nowhere if you don't trust. That's what relationships are built on.
Yeah, and if it does end up being a betrayal of your trust, like, you learn a lesson.
Snatch or learn your lesson.
I think that you're fine.
No, and you know what? If you don't trust, then you'll always have this in the back of your mind. Relationship won't move forward. You're always thinking this, making yourself sick, making yourself crazy. You gotta just lean in, fall in love.
Fall in love.
That's why they call it falling.
Oh, good call. Hey, Jackie and Claudia. First, I want to say I love the show. I always have to hold in my laughter at work while listening.
Oh my God, thank you.
I'm going to start by saying we're all 22 years old. Okay. My friend Lily and I have
I need to get to 22 years old in my head. Just graduated college, like, good times, let's
feeling
roll.
Young and fun.
Post-grad, working hard. We're working hard and we're playing hard.
My friend Lily and I have been super close friends for 2 years. About 6 months ago, we started having little issues here and there. Like, she would talk down to me, make me feel like I wasn't wanted. We have a huge group of friends, but I met most of them through her boyfriend, so she's closer to them. Recently, my other close friend and I, we'll call her Jane, have noticed a complete change on how Lily acts, dresses, and in the things that she likes to do. All are now exactly what her boyfriend's friends do and wear. Jane and I have texted about this on multiple occasions, about how she treats me, about how she's changing, and how she's pushed everyone out of her life from her pre-boyfriend days, besides me and Jane. 2 weeks ago, Lily came on a trip with me and some of my family friends, and when we got back, she completely ghosted me, ignored my texts, and posted all over her social media about getting rid of negative people. I was confused and finally asked what the hell was going on. Apparently, one of the nights on the trip, she was playing music on my phone and decided to go through me and Jane's texts. She read from December 2019 until now. I guess my overall thing is, how the heck am I supposed to react to that? Of course, no one should have to read things about themselves, but at the same time, those messages were between two close friends and no one else. There were also many personal things in our messages about Jane's family, so part of me is really sorry for the things that she read, and the other part of me is angry for having my texts read like I'm 12 years old. Any advice would be amazing. Love you and thanks in advance. An annoyed and confused toaster. That's a terrible position.
Yeah, that's a terrible position to be in. This is why I'm anti-Snoop.
Yeah.
Firmly anti-Snoop. And you know what? Honestly, she did you a favor, because even if she hadn't read your text and decided to dump you, like, she seems like a shitty friend to begin with, and then also a follower and not her own person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what were you getting out of this friendship? You said she talked down to you, and now it's like she doesn't even know who she is. She's just pretending to be someone that she's not. And you can't trust her. She goes through your phone. So, like, she thinks she's cutting out negative people. You should say, I cut you first.
Yeah, no. You can't cut me if I cut you.
Yeah. No, you were already cut.
It sounds like she did you a big favor. Like, you were over her and now she has reason to be over you. Don't tell Jane that she read the text messages of the personal stuff, because that might upset Jane. I just think, honestly, everything happens for a reason, and it sounds like you're in a good position now.
Yeah, and you know what? Jane sounds like a wonderful friend. Focus your energies on Jane.
Agreed.
Like, stop the energy that you were giving to Lily. You cut her first. Remember that. That is key. And channel your energies towards Jane. You're only 22 years old. It's never too late to make new friends. Like,
no, it's
this
never.
Is actually a great time, like, because you're in a transition period of being out of college. Like, this is a time in your life when you do make friends. And I think that you should focus your energies into new friendships, and you're cutting out this negative energy. You cut it out first.
Yeah, you cut her first. And I think, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Sounds like she did you a big favor and you didn't have to have the uncomfortable conversation. Of course, not an ideal way for her to find things out, but you know what? You just got to move on. Sometimes it's like, we're getting too old for this. Like, just let it go.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I understand there is a need to snoop. I understand, like, you can't trust your partner and you need to get to the truth, but you never need to go through a friend's phone. Ever.
I agree. There's nothing you're going to find out there that's going to save your life. Like,
no.
I agree. And no. It's someone who goes through your phone, like, actually,
it's not to be trusted.
If I had a friend who went through my phone, like, I would feel so betrayed.
I would never speak to them again.
Yeah, ever. I agree. All right, final one. Hi, Claudia and Jackie. Came across your show almost 2 years ago, and I just have to say thank you for keeping me sane and laughing every day.
Oh my God, you're so welcome. I'm so glad that you found the show and that we can make you laugh, and it's just, thank you for being part of the community. Like, that's so beautiful.
Okay, now on to the story. A few months ago, a few of us were at a bonfire at a friend's house, Sandy. Sandy owns this house with her boyfriend, Danny. Oh, the girl obviously made up names. It's Greece.
Okay, that's funny.
Sandy and Danny have a beach house that they own together. Their boyfriend and girlfriend.
How old are these people?
I don't know. It says Sandy owns this house with her boyfriend, Danny.
That's, like, so amazing.
My stepsister, Rachel, was there, too. After the get-together, Rachel confided in me about some inappropriate comments that Danny had made towards her at the bonfire when no one else was around. She didn't want me to cause drama or awkwardness with Sandy, so she just asked me not to say anything. Mind you, Rachel is also in a relationship, so this is weird all around. Hmm. According to Rachel, Danny slapped her ass and said, "I can keep a secret if you can." And at one point, she said he mouthed the words, "Can I finger you?" to her. What? Who asks that? Anyways, Danny can at times be a bit of a flirt, but it usually is harmless. I also know he was pretty drunk, so I'm not sure if he even remembers. I'm not sure what to do because Sandy is one of my best friends, but my stepsister asked me not to say anything. Do I approach Danny and tell him I'm aware of what he said and let him tell Sandy? Do I let this slide and watch out for future weird encounters? Help.
That is so
sincerely
weird.
A conflicted toaster. Honestly, I would normally say stay out of it, but some of the things that he did are, like, predatory. Like,
yeah.
Slapping someone's ass who didn't ask for it. Can I finger you? Like, that's not flirty. That's harassment.
Yeah.
I say get involved.
You say tell Sandy?
Because this isn't harmless. Like, this is indicative of a character trait in Danny that Sandy should not be with.
Yeah, or that at least Sandy should be aware of.
Yeah.
So.
But she doesn't have to say that it was Rachel.
Yeah.
Say someone told me and, like, I would never not tell you, but I don't want to break this person's trust, but, like, Danny did X. Rachel doesn't even need to be involved.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree.
You know, men are fucking disgusting.
Disgusting.
Like, who, by the way, to be so brazen and do it in the same house as your girlfriend, who you own a house with her, like, I could never.
Yeah, no, fucking sick. Tell your friend. You just gotta prioritize good friendships, you know?
Yeah, and this isn't harmless flirting. Like, it's borderline, like, really inappropriate harassment. And I'm sure if Sandy knew, like, this is the type of thing you actually break up with someone over.
Yes.
So I say Sandy's got to know, and maybe Sandy will find a nice guy at...
Yeah, maybe she'll buy him out of the beach house. She'll go for a walk on the beach, and she'll find someone.
He showed up, splashing around. I like that. I don't know if that girl did it on purpose, because Rachel is not a character in Grease.
That's true.
But if you're going to write into us, again, deartoasters@gmail.com, feel free to have fun with your fictional characters.
I don't know, maybe Rachel was, like, Rizzo's little sister.
No, I don't think so.
Because this girl's, like, Rizzo in this story.
Yeah, but, oh my God, is this a fake story? No. But if you are going to write in, like, give me, you know, Katie, Regina, and Aaron, you know?
Yeah, and Katie.
So again, that's deartoasters@gmail.com if you ever want to write in. Thank you guys who did write in, and thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We got two more before we're back in studio.
Yes.
So if there's not enough content on this episode for you, you can head over to patreon.com/themorningtoast, which is our subscription service. If you want to pay $7.99 a month, you can get access to 5 extra podcasts and vlog episodes every month. And then once you sign up, you actually get access to the whole catalog of all the episodes we've ever done, which is, like, over 200, because we've been doing Patreon for well over a year. Well over 2 years. And then that $7.99 also gets you access to the members-only Facebook group, The Toast After Dark, which is a place for pop culture fanatics, toast fanatics, to talk, commiserate, chat, all the things.
We have some great episodes planned for September while we're still on vacation, and it will just be a great month to be a patron, as it always is.
So that's patreon.com/themorningtoast. Have an amazing week, everyone.
We hope
take
you
care
find
of yourself.
We hope you find your inner peace.
Search for inner peace.
If you're having a hard time finding it, check out The Redheads. New episode drops tomorrow. We read The Bright Side, which so many people loved. A lot of people didn't. It's going to make for a lively conversation, y'all.
And if you're needing even more, all of our TNN shows are
churning out new content.
Margaret Josephs has a ton of new video and podcast episodes available. Lauren Elizabeth has some fire content being put out. Raven and Alexis on Girls Night, they sat down with Nick Vial, and their last night, their Greatest of All Time episode was on, so I think they're going to do an episode recapping their time on The Bachelor. That's just, you know, killing it, and make sure to check it out. Support all the TNN shows. Thank you guys so much. We love you, and we hope you have an amazing week.
Bye.
Bye.